Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Transition that in itself keeps it engaging. Because how many times have we seen sessions where maybe it's a tap versus defense or some sort of practice where I'll be defending this morning, practice is dead.
Let's
start again.
I know, but I'm quite smart enough to do this. What do I think, believe?
Right, guys, welcome back to Coaches Conversations with Pete and Yas in partnership with St. Mary's University in the Masters in Performance Football Coaching. My name is Yas and I'm a UEFA A-licensed coach and coach educator.
And I'm Peter Augustine. I am an A-licensed coach and also a former, or not former, currently a coach developer.
Awesome. Pete, obviously on the last conversation that we had, we talked about where coaches could think about starting with their session planning. You know, there was a few key considerations that came up from there. But also we had a really insightful conversations off air where we talked about the importance of observation skills. And I think it's obviously a massive challenge for coaches to start to think about, where do I start with observing? What should I be observing? What's good observation? What's bad observation? What's good practice and not? So, you know, I'm throwing a question to you to start with. You know, where do I start with observations? Just maybe talk a little bit around, what does observation look like to you in a coaching context?
For me, observation is about this idea of what are you actually looking for. So can you pick something out? Because you can't observe everything. You have an overall view of what you're doing, but you've got to be thinking about, well, actually, what did I work on in training the other day? So if, say, for example, I worked on my midfield players turning and playing forward, when those opportunities come up, I should be looking at that. Doesn't mean to say I'll ignore the stuff where we're defending and all that sort of stuff, but I want to know, was my session effective? So that piece around being quite specific about what you're observing and how you're observing it is really key. Now, what we have these days is we have a lot of opportunities to have feedback after the game. So most games now are in some way recorded. So we've got VOs and camcorders and that sort of stuff. So people can look back at the game and start to look at certain things. And if you know that you're looking for something specific, if you're going to record your game, you might start to look at where those things happen. Then you can start to look at those individuals who are involved in that. Because one of the things I think, especially with grassroots football, is that when you record a game that day is historical. So it's not, oh yeah, we played so-and-so, and last time they did this against us, and they did that against us, so we're going to do this against them. But when you play them, they've got a load of new players.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot in non-league.
Yeah.
So you've gone out and you say, oh, we're going to play this team, and they've got this, that, and the other. And you might be playing somebody at the top of the league, and their team's got a lot of money. And they've gone, oh yeah, they've got these players. But halfway through the season, some of the players have left, and they've got new players coming, and they've made a new signing, or what have you. So our observation of them in the last game we played against them might be useless. Even if we go and see them 2 games ago, we've got to see them against another opposition. Well, what are we observing? So we, you know, so it might be said, oh, well, they did this against that opposition. Yeah, they did. But what would they do against us? Because we're a different team to that team. So it's those kind of things.
I think some great points. I think for me, I'm looking at observations. I'm saying, right, well, if we take on the back of the example you've just given there, it's at grassroots level, depending on how high you're looking, you're probably not going to get too much differentiation around opponent to opponent in how we approach it, or at least how the opponents may approach us as individual teams. Because fundamentally they're saying, well, this is how we're going to play, this is how we're going to play. We haven't got the context, we haven't got enough information about the opposition, but obviously now you're talking about games being recorded with videos and things like that, there is that capacity to do so. But I think it's looking at, well, what are the observations, where can the observations take us? So it could be looking at it from an individual standpoint, it can be from a team perspective. I mean, my advice to coaches at that stage of the game is, don't worry too much about what the opposition's doing, worry about what you guys are doing, what was your game plan, and did that work? Why was that your game plan? What was the stimulus for that? So for instance, if I know that your team is pressing high, well, have I prepared my team to do that? And how did we then respond to that? So rather than looking at you guys as a team, I'm just looking at it as a concept, well, I'm going to observe my team and how effectively they dealt with the team that presses high, rather than it's Pete's team. Because then that could be how you differentiate and maybe isolate that piece away from the context itself, which still gives you something to work on. But then, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges is coaches looking at what happens away from the ball.
Yes.
Right? And I think, and, you know, and I can speak from my own experience of working with coaches and even myself, in that it's that looking away from the ball piece that sometimes we look so directly at what's happening on the ball that we don't realise and don't even consider that actually it's because of something else that's happening around it and even further away from it that this is actually happening here in the first place. So, you know, an easy example of that would be, right, you spent too much time on the ball, or I think you've overplayed it, or you tried to dribble too much, you've taken one too many touches. But actually, if I zoom out now and I realise actually Pete's had to take an extra touch, or he's taken too many touches there because there's no one actually available for him to give it to. And if his initial intention is, I'm going to get my head up and look to play a pass into someone, but there's no one there, well, common sense will tell you that you're going to end up spending too much time on the ball potentially lose possession, right? Yeah. But then, you know, that's a bit of a challenge for coaches, because how do we manage that? How do we demonstrate our understanding and ability to actually look away from the ball, and then beyond that, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's very easy to just go, that happened there in that moment. But when you start to look at a piece of, and we're going to probably look at a little bit of footage in a bit, where you think that something's happened, and then when you look back at it, you see something else, and you alluded to that. But that is a skill. Observation, people forget that observation is a skill. It takes a long time to acquire it. And I think a lot of coaches think, oh, if I don't know the detail, I don't know this, I don't know that, I'm a bad coach. No. Because it takes time, it's a skill, you have to develop it. Coaching itself, I see it as an art form.
Yeah.
To be able to, if you're look at the 11v11 game, you've got 22 players on the pitch. And you've got to start to think about, well, okay, which bits am I looking at?
Yeah.
If I'm working with younger players, I might be looking at something really, really specific. How do we receive the ball? Do we reserve?
I get your point, but I think it's probably the other way around. I think with younger players, it's probably specific in that this is the theme, but it's broad in terms of what it could look like. Whereas I think the older you go, it's like, well, it's specific in terms of the theme, but specific in terms of what it looks like.
Yeah, but I think that you know, I see what you're saying, but I think what as you get older, you now have tactics and strategies that come in, roles and responsibilities. Those things, they come into it as well. Because you're looking at, say, for example, you're saying you want to stop their number 10 from marauding forward. Well, you've got to do something about that.
Yeah.
And you actually might have to do that in the moment, because you don't know, or you might not have known that number 10 does that.
Yeah.
Because you've got no footage, say, for example, of that number 10 doing that. So you've got to be able to observe that. See, that's the problem here.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in games where, I remember one particular game, and this probably showed how bad coach I was at the time. We were 5-0 down, and I couldn't work out why we were 5-0 down. And it was only until sort of like weeks later, I didn't even see the footage, and I thought, oh, we kept trying to play out. And I spoke to, and I'd actually spoken to a player who played in the other team, and he said to me, well, we knew you were going to play, so we just said we were just going to press you. And I thought to myself, oh gosh, how didn't that? How did I not see that? So the thing to do was to go was to play over their press.
Yeah.
But I was so fixated
on
trying to play out that I actually didn't see what it was, the problem. Well, it was a real problem. So But again, that's that thing that's around, you know, if we're talking about observation, we've also got to observe, what are we trying to achieve? Are we achieving it? And if we're not achieving it, why aren't we achieving it?
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because if you're talking about observation, and you know, obviously when we spoke last, we talked about how to plan sessions and what to look out for within that, but it's also the observation piece should be highlighted, that it's not just for games, it's actually what's happening in sessions as well.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And identifying that, are the variables consistent? You know, are we putting the same pictures in place for the players to understand that this is the scenario and this is where it's come from?
Mm.
And obviously that, you talk there about, you know, the night of the world, if we've got the footage, that's great. But, you know, what are some of the ways in which you think that players, you know, coaches can start to consider, right, how do I draw on some of this potential data without actually having footage available? You know, what are the different ways that, you know, I've explored a few different things like this season, and how and what I've looked at as potential, you know, indicators of performance. You know, I'm looking at things like, you know, when we create a chance, as an example, where is, or even if it's, whether it's been a goal or not, where's the shot being taken from? What's led to that? How many touches have they taken? And all, you know, all the different things that you can kind of break down within that. Obviously, depending on what level of the game you're working at, and depending on what level of players you're working at, you might differentiate how much depth you go into with the detail, or you might not, because you might decide, actually, no, I still want to give them everything and anything. I want to get the full context, the full picture. You know, what are some of the different ways in which you've kind of experimented with observations and the data in that respect?
I think sometimes it's just that I used to use a computer program. It's a little app kind of thing. And it would be how many times we played a forward pass, and you were able to just tap on it, and every time we played a forward pass. But that was very, very rudimentary, because a forward pass could be someone just clips it into the corner, and the ball runs out of play. But that would still be as part of the data. The other thing is having some really specific measurements about what I want. And I use the example of, you know, turning out and playing forward. It might be around by defending, how many players do we get around the ball every time one of their players receives it in the middle of the pitch, say, for example. So I might say, I talk about my experiences as a coach here. You know, I'll say to my players, right, when they get the ball, I want three players around the ball. I don't care which three players are, but three players must be around the ball. And if we send three players out there, they must not get out of that situation. If we send one over, we slow them down. If we send two over, we're trying to steal the ball. If we send three over, we must come out with the ball. Right? So the players knew that by that metric that was going to happen. So if I saw that, I could write down two, and then I'd say what happened.
It was the outcome. Yeah,
it was the outcome. Yeah. So the outcome might be, we sent two out there, and we didn't win the ball as a cross.
Yeah.
We sent three out there. We came out with the ball, but we didn't. We made the first pass, but we lost it on the second pass.
Yeah.
So I might go tick cross, say for example, something. But very rudimentary.
Yeah.
But it's because it's specific. I can go back to the players and say, right, when we sent two in on five occasions, we didn't come out with the ball.
Yeah.
So what have we got to do better second half? Okay. Because now. Because
it's something a bit more objective for them to lean on, and I think all the time in that, you know, having that objective piece of data there that they can't argue with,
yes,
is so important in terms of building your credibility as a coach and there, and then to buy into what you're trying to. I'm reluctant to refer to it as selling to the player, but it's allowing them to buy it without you having to sell it.
Yeah, because the players have got to have you.
Yeah, exactly.
If they're not having you, then you've got a bit of a problem there, and that again comes from your observation skills, your ability to observe what are they doing, because you want to be able to say to them, this is where we need to be better, this is how we can be better, right? We can even be specific around individual players about, you know, what we're looking for. We were talking about earlier, we were talking about when Manchester City scored a goal in the cup final, weren't we? And we were talking about, well, actually, what actually happened?
So let's talk about that, because obviously, you mentioned there about Man City, and you know, prior to that, you talked about coaches thinking they need to have the finer detail and stuff like that. But actually, if you haven't got that playing experience, if you haven't got that exposure through coach education or in any other means, you can actually go out and watch the game and learn that yourself.
You can,
if you pay attention to it. So, you know, let's talk about that in understanding, well, what are coaches actually paying attention to? How does it impact on what they're paying attention to? And how does that then influence their future planning and practices and engagement with players?
Yeah.
So I know that you've got a piece of footage that you want to kind of examine.
Yeah, and for me, I found this fascinating, and this is the beauty of this is more to do with the fact of the first goal, because it was that piece around what actually happened, and we were talking about that, and I think that's really, really important. So the thing is about this is that the ball goes back, goes forward, the header's won, Manchester United actually win the header, and then Gündoğan scores. But just by looking at that, you think, oh, what a great goal, or whatever it is. But if we go back to the beginning of that sequence, and we go right way back, some of the detail, Gündoğan takes the kickoff, right?
Mm.
Now the first thing is, Gundogan's not the centre forward. He's a central midfield player.
Yeah, 100%. Typically, you'd see your centre forward taking it, or if there's a, you know, if you look at traditional, you'd see the pair of centre forwards taking it.
Exactly, yeah. So anyway, so he takes the kick and he goes back. He goes backwards, but he goes all the way back to the goalkeeper. And what happens is the two centre backs split, which allow the ball to go back to the goalkeeper, and then the goalkeeper is able to play the forward pass into Haaland, and then the ball's won. But it was some things, and we talked about this, which were really even more what I'd call fascinating about this. So the goalkeeper's got the ball, but right here, you see the centre back stops Rashford from pressing the goalkeeper, which gives the goalkeeper more time, and also Haaland more time to get forward.
Mm. Okay. I mean, I would argue, even looking at this, that if you let it run in a few more seconds, he's probably actually just disrupted Rashford completely to the point where Rashford's not even going to press it.
Exactly,
he's not only delayed him, he's actually said, no, you're not doing this.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so Rashford's, I can't do anything about this.
Yeah, exactly.
Then the ball goes in, and as the header goes up, the ball actually in the air, it's a 50-50, isn't it? 50-50. But what happens here? The header is won by Manchester United. They actually win the header. Mm. But if you look at Gundogan's positioning, he's gambling and he's saying, well, we worked on this. I need to be in and around it. So you've got De Bruyne, you've got Gundogan, they're around the ball. And then as the ball drops, Gundogan has no other thought in his head. I'm smashing this. Because you just look at his eyes, you look at where he's not thinking about taking a touch, he's just going, I'm having a go.
Yeah.
And then bang, it's a goal.
But I think even within that, there's so many finer bits of detail, right? But I guess the challenge for the coach is thinking, if I'm looking at this piece of footage, how do I see what's important and what's having an influence? Because, you know, you could talk there, if we go about the technical aspects, we can talk about how efficient the technique is, how efficient is it. And I think the real key thing that we're really asking coaches to think about here, and it, you know, is what's having an influence on the player's ability to perform an action.
Yeah.
What's having an influence on the player's ability to decide on whether they're going to select an action or a decision, right? So obviously in this case, we're looking at, well, first of all, what frame of mind does it put in the Man United players when they see Gundogan taking his kickoff?
Yes, right, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's probably some confusion there.
Or they might not even be thinking about it.
No, they might not be.
Yeah, because they're thinking, well, it's Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
He's likely to do anything. So he goes, all right, what's going on there? But the question I ask myself, they were looking at that, is you can always go, oh, well, they could have done this, they could have done that, they could have done this. Yeah, they could have done. But what about if, say, for example, Rashford doesn't run at the centre-back.
100%.
He runs in between the two centre-backs.
Yeah.
Right? Because he kind of...
He tries to clear off. Yeah.
But he doesn't really make a really good effort of it. Because he's thinking, Well, he's not going to score from there.
Yeah.
Right? If that goes over my head, our defenders should be able to deal with that.
100%.
Okay? So, then you look at around at the rest of the picture, and you look at the other defenders are doing, right? Which is actually quite fascinating here. It goes forward, and if you actually look at that around the ball, there's and you know, you talked earlier about a one and around and away from the ball. So this is kind of, it's a funny one because it's kind of a 4-2.
Mm.
But it's a funny 4-2 because the two players a bit further back don't really have a lot to do in that initial with that initial contact. But if you go forward a little bit more, it's actually a 3-1 in City's favour.
Mm.
If you look at the picture where you look how close De Bruyne is to Haaland, and then you've got Gundogan in that hole where there's no Manchester United player around him, okay? And as the ball drops, there we go, and then he gets the shot off. But if you, at that moment when he gets the shot off, it's actually a 1-3-1. You could even say a 4-1.
Mm.
So in that moment, Manchester United had, and if you look in the picture here, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 Manchester United players, Manchester City players, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, including the goalkeeper, 8 Man U players.
But I think that's also a consideration that, in my opinion, coaches don't often make enough, right? Is that when we're now doing practices in and around the attacking areas of the pitch, well, more often than not, you're going to be outnumbered.
Yeah.
You're going to be outnumbered, but how well are you practicing that?
Exactly.
How often are you practicing? Yeah. And I think there's another key consideration, I think it's probably one for a future conversation, but it's, how often are you practicing where that pressure is coming from?
Yeah.
You know, how diverse is that? Is it always going to be 1v1 of you in front of me? Or actually, no, is it sometimes 1v1 you coming from the side or coming from behind or wherever? And if it is then a 2v1 situation or an overload or an underload situation, where's that pressure coming from?
Mm.
And why is it coming from this? Mm. You know, I think there's a lot that we've kind of looked at within that. So just talking about the observation piece in particular, where do coaches start?
We start with being specific. What am I looking for?
Mm.
Okay, who are the players that are involved? Okay, and what's their effect on the game?
Mm.
All right, and is that in possession or out of possession?
100%. I think you're spot on there, Pete. Another fascinating conversation, guys. Thank you again for your time today. Coaching conversation with Pete and Yas. Today we looked at observations. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, in partnership with St. Mary's University and the Masters Performance Coaching Program. Until next time, guys, take care.